Greetings, everybody. This is Pastor Buddy. Welcome in here tonight with us to the Shepherd's Call. We're live and direct. This is August the 7th. We're moving right along in the time. Praise Yahweh. We're going to get into some discussion tonight about the flood. We're going back to Genesis. We're going to look into the flood. And to do so, we've got to go back to the 6th chapter. And then we'll talk about the time before the flood, pre-flood, and the present state of the flood at the time, and the after effects of the flood and who it affected. Got some very important points, we believe, to bring up for you, so you better get your notepad, take notes, as we're going to look at the flood models that are in the Bible and see if they're consistent with Bible and science and philosophy and theological points that are made in relationship to the flood. It's a great mystery. Now, if you believe that the flood of Genesis was worldwide and it killed everything in the earth that breathed, with the exception of 8 human beings left standing, then you are in the majority. Most of Bible-believing, and atheists as well, when I say atheists, they even believe this. I mean, popular consensus is that there was a worldwide flood that covered the entire earth. Hey, I want you to just visualize this in your mind. If you'll stop and think and visualize the almost impossibilities for God Himself. And you say, well, I don't know one thing that God can't do, and that's He can't lie. Well, He can't lie. But a lot of people take Him out of context, and they don't make a liar out of Him. They make a liar or a deceived one out of themselves. Creationists who write about the flood and the flood story, from all the information I've read, They contradict themselves and the story and everything else. In the book of Whitcomb and Morris that's published in 1961, for example, they suggest that large numbers of kinds of land animals became extinct because of the flood. While Genesis repeatedly says that Noah was ordered to take a representative sample of all kinds of land animals on the ark to save them from extinction. And that Noah did as ordered. Well, did he? Well, depends on how that you do your interpreting or how much time you spend in thinking about the flood or studying. A lot of people don't, they just take, most people don't study, they don't prove themselves, they don't go in and read in the dimensional spiritual aspects, they just mess around if it seems right, and it's told enough and repeated enough, and God destroyed everything on earth, and that Adam and everything that was created after Adam, with the exception of Noah, his 3 sons and their 3 wives, and Noah's wife, which made 8 living souls, were the only ones standing when this flood ended, and that Noah and his sons replenished the earth, and now we've got approximately anywhere from 6 to 8 billion, depending on who believes the count process here, but let's just say we got 6 billion, give it a round, nice round figure of 6, because we'll show you that 6 is sort of important here as we get into the theological points that we're going to try to make here, but 6 billion in approximately 5,757 years, if we go back and use the biblical account of time from the origination of Adam, that's from Adam. So we're looking at probably around 4,000 years ago, or thereabout, for the flood. 4,000 years. Now in Genesis 6, verse 8, it speaks of only rain. Makes no mention of other catastrophes which the creationists associate with the flood. Because, you see, you have to associate some explanation of the philosophical ideals about the flood as you lock into scientific logic, and therein creates a problem for the deep thinkers. Now, if you've never thought of it, it doesn't matter anyway for you, because you're just going to believe anything that the general consensus is, the popular belief, or what we call a standard bell box jargon that comes out of the mouth of the false prophets. I believe that we have been indoctrinated, conditioned to think in certain ways, and we're boxed in, and we've got a major problem. Now, let me assure you right now that there is a problem with Noah as the only genetic offspring remaining upon the earth with his three sons, which made 4, their three wives, which made 7, and Noah's wife, which made 8. Now, unless, this is a unless, one of those sons was black, one was yellow, which is Adriatic, and one of them was a, let's say, this is sort of funny, but I'm not trying to be funny here, a Duke's mixture. And hell, I mean, if you look at all the hodgepodge race mixtures that we got on the earth today out of that 6 billion, one of those sons would have had to have been a doozy, a blood genetic mixture to produce such a mess as we got here upon the earth today. Let's go back and look in the most populous places that history has afforded us to look at, which would be the East, which is the Asiatics. They seem to be a race that is originally created by the blood genetic displays without any mongolization. Now, there's mongolization today between all races. I'll get into that later. With our blood, have kept pretty original. If we go back to China, we go back to the China dynasty. I'm a darn kid, don't get us. Their continuous history goes back farther than. Now, they have written in their legends stories about a flood, but it's not central to their region that they are repeating some old wives' fable tales, I guess, probably, or word of mouth, that there was a place on the earth, and by the way, it was very close to them, I believe, in the Turin Basin, right down the slopes there in eastern Mesopotamia, where I believe that this great bowl, if you look from space, you can see a great fertile valley of the Mesopotamian Valley, the fertile plains, and then the cup effect of the earth in its relationship in the mountains as they slope up into the Himalayas, which, by the way, run up about 30,000 feet approximately. And then you have the Caspian region, the mountains, that actually is that later that the Israelites actually took and crossed and escaped. And it's quite possible that these Assyrians, and history I think could verify what I'm trying to tell you here, that the Assyrian race are the progenitors of this Aryan race of Sumerians and the Mesopotamians from which Abraham was chosen and taken and set aside and go a little bit further out into the basin and extract. We're going to talk about that in the succeeding follow-ups on this message here tonight. As we talk about the flood, was it central, located in a region, contained within a region, or was it catastrophic, as most everybody believes that it was a worldwide flood that actually put all of the land on the planet underneath water. There was not one dry place left that did not have a covering of water. But if you go back to the book of Peter, Peter listens to the earth that perished then. Now, the earth didn't perish, so these are terminologies that has to be looked at and studied on and pondered and thought about, because they're broad brushing, and maybe, I don't know, just maybe they're doing some of this deliberately, or maybe that the Father has chosen the words that makes it very, very hard to understand. And then only the elite, only those gifted and only those that's chosen to bring forth the mysteries and revelate them and open up the mysteries that's standing in the water and out of the water. The Bible says that. And Peter, when he's talking about the destruction of the name. Now that is a point blank contradiction of the creationists, these evangelical conservatives that literally believe that everything in the Word of God is literal. And just like it says, and then they try to hide all of the inaccuracies, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, after a Bible has been compiled for over at least 4,000 years, they've been working on this great text that we call the Bible. And I indeed appreciate it. I love it. I care for it. I study it every day. I think on it. I have fasted. If the time was added up, the days I've really fasted to understand it, it would be scary to think of somebody could fast that many days just to know a little bit about the Bible. And really, I'll let you in on the secret. I found out I don't know nothing about it. The more I know that I know, the more I know that I don't know. And this, therein lies the beginning of the unfolding, the unflowering, if you will, of the lotus, as you can look into the rim of the revelation of the hidden secrets kept secret from the foundation of the earth that was standing in the water and out of the water. So, no, I'm going to tell you right up front, I do not believe that the flood was worldwide. I do believe that there was a surviving people upon the earth. I believe that the ones that were destroyed were the offspring of Adam in the central Tyrian basin where he and his sons were multiplying from Genesis chapter 5. Now, from Genesis chapter 5, it's only from 7 to 3 with as it was in the days of Noah. The Bible says it will return to that day, and as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. Well, if you realize that, that would include the population. If we've got 6 billion, approximately 8 billion now, we've got that. We had that many back then, and there's nothing new under the sun for what is to be already been. Are you following my line of thinking here? Let me give you a little problem to work on. How can a little interpretation be approximate if the text itself is self-contradictory? You say, oh, well, it's not contradictory, Pastor Buddy. The Bible is glory to God. There ain't no errors in the Bible. Look at the morning, I'll just get in the errors. That I'll show you that the Bible is full of errors. Now, whether typographical, intentional, diabolical, or just down through the centuries, man is monkeying around with it. I believe that the general Bible has been compiled and put together pretty reasonable, but I do believe the effects of Revelation chapter 22, the last chapter, verse 19, warns us, almost the last verse. Starting verse 19, if you'll read that and wake up, you'll see that if you'll take the blinders off of your understanding and get out of the traditional mode of conservative, evangelical, hoorah, hoorah, there is no mistake, You better think again. If you don't believe that somebody's tampered with the evidence here in the Bible, what we call the Holy Word of God, if you don't believe that somebody's got in there and mucking around with a text, then you're probably one of the most naive evangelical conservative Christians with this traditional viewpoint that you take everything in the Bible literal. Now, if you don't, the Bible itself tells you to rightly divide the Word. And if only 8 souls were standing 4,000 years ago, and we've multiplied in 4,000 years, then the earth that over to Noah would have had to multiply and turn evil. Now, we're starting in Genesis chapter 6. You're going to have to face the music here. And let me give you something to think about. Now, write these scriptures down. Genesis 6:20. And Genesis 7:14 say that there were two kind, each a foul and clean beast, taken on board. Yet Genesis 7:2, 3, and 5 says that they came in sevens. How can a little interpretation be consistent with reality, and how could Noah have gathered every male and female of each kind in Genesis 7:15-16, when some species are asexual, others are parthenogenic and have only females, and others, such as earthworms, are hermaphrodites? What about the social animals like ants and termites, which need the whole nest to survive? Did he hang termite nests and ant nests and all these other weird creatures? You say, oh, Pastor Buddy, those survive because they don't breathe. Said every living thing that breathed in the water and out died. Is that what it said? Or is that what you think? That's what you think. That ain't what it said. So you go back and check those scriptures that I gave you. Did they come in sevens or did they come in twos? If you take the Bible interpretation and it entices you to take the flood literally, then you shouldn't, or shouldn't you also believe in a flat and stationary earth? For Daniel 4:10-11, Matthew 4:8, 1 Chronicles 16:30, and Psalms 93:1, if you'll read that, you don't have a globe hanging out here suspended in space with a gravity effects that it would be logically impossible for the earth to be flooded continuously around the globe with a great ball of water suspended over it at least 30,000 feet to reach the top of the highest mountains, and they could have been higher mountain chains than that during that time.
I mean, we can solve the problem.
And reduce all the mountain chains and say they were only like 30, 40 feet high. Then we would reduce the weight. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about, and if you just do the arithmetic, it is strange. Creationists say that this is an incredible pain in the neck, neither honest nor useful, and the people who advocate it have no idea that the possible danger that it is presenting the gospel to the lost and defining God's truth, we ourselves, seems to be false through trying to explain away the impossible. But could it be probable that Noah was a descendant of Adam, and Adam was one of the descendants upon the earth, and that there were other races upon the earth that weren't destroyed, that continued in a social setting as they evolved? But was Adam a special creation? Was he above the average other races upon the earth? Was he to invent? Was he to subdue? And that word subdue is not taking a baseball bat and banging the heads of the cave dwellers and dragging them off to some concentration camp and ruling over them, as most people now are trying to do. That ain't what it meant. It meant to be helpful, to become aware of the earth and its fragile development, that we have to be kind to it. It gives back only what we put into it, and it takes away those who are disobedient at times when it
wheels and rocks
like a drunken man.
Pastor Buddy and Shepherd, while we're talking about flood, I'll be back, and we'll find out exactly if there was a worldwide flood, or whether it was just a localized flood.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Pastor Buddy. We're talking about the question. I think it's relevant for the time, because we're coming back to the days of Noah, and I'm going to get in, when we end this series here on the flood, I'm going to get into the seven last signs that will take us home. We're going to cultivate this in the climactic chapter of Matthew chapter 24, where it's indicated by the Great One, the Messiah himself, the HaMashiach, how that he indicated that there would be seven end-time signs that would bring us back to the days before the flood. And I've been quoted you the scripture, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. So, let me give you something to think about here. Why is there no mention of a flood in the records of the Egyptian or the Mesopotamian civilizations which existed at the time, and only in China, where it's an older dynasty, I believe? Is there just written records to indicate that they were talking about a flood somewhere else other than in the plains of China? There is references in historical documents all over the earth that there was a flood, but not in the region central or relative to the document, because it doesn't mention any, and it wouldn't have if everybody was killed and destroyed. There couldn't have been any record after the fact. How did the human population rebound so fast? As the genealogies in Genesis took the Tower of Babel about 110 and no more than 150 years. Now, you can believe that if you do your homework and you're figuring here. The Tower of Babel, at least just less than 200 years. after the flood, and that's, you'll find that in Genesis 10, 25, and the 11th chapter, and repeat 10 and 19, how did the world population regrow so fast to make its construction and the city around it possible? If it was just Noah and his sons in 100 years or so, how were they able to build cities? And you don't know actually the depth and comprehension of the word that is used in the 10th and 11th chapter of Genesis. For that their science had got so exact that they were again mapping the heavens, displaying their ability to go into the heavens. Now the tower whose top was to reach into heaven is that's a word trying to display or to describe the technology that was present in that day, and as it was in the days of Noah. Look at the technology today. We're in space. Were they in space? Were they exploring space in Genesis 10? When the Father looked down upon the peoples and saw the wickedness 100 years after the flood. And the whole purpose of the flood was to destroy the wicked. You say, well, that would have included all the earth. It's the same scenario that we're trapped in today. You see, the wicked were those who knew how to be righteous. The wicked were those that was judged by some kind of a covenant and some kind of a contract. Only the righteous can turn wicked. The wicked that are upon the earth to turn the righteous wicked are two different species or two different genetic sets of peoples and possibly more. And when I go back to the Garden of Eden, I display that there's four distinct genetics coming out of the four rivers that are displayed in Genesis, which, by the way, is displaying the streams of life, the four major genetics. You've got your black man, who by all of the anthropologists, as they look into the earth and examine the skeletal remains and look for evidence of prehistoric man, they can go back. They've got footprints, ladies and gentlemen, that goes back millions of years, embedded in the strata. Footprints of humans. Down in Texas, they got one that goes back 15 million years right here on our own continent. But if you go to the plains of Africa, where the black race was already dominating that region and the jungles, they were actually scavengers roaming the jungles and the plains of Africa, and they're still down there, really, still cannibals down there. And the advent of a white man to raise the thinking level and brought in a great surge of information. These are the evil ones. These are the ones that turned evil of Genesis chapter 6 with the intervention of outside help. Here's where the dilemma and the plot thickens to where that if you don't have some spiritual get up and go, you're never going to come back to the revelation of truth that's hid from you in Genesis about the flood. Now let me give you an example here. The flood, given the generational lengths in Genesis, now I'm just giving you the mathematical events given in the lengths of the generations from Seth, places the flood 1,300 years before Solomon began the first temple. 1,300 years. Now, if you construct a chronology for the Near Eastern history, particularly for Egypt, let's just take Egypt for example, and a pyramid. If you go to any kind of scientific carbon dating or any other records from the literate cultures of the Near East in Egypt, these records are independent of but supported by the dating methods such as the chronology of carbon 14 dating, and a building of the first temple then can be dated to 950 BC plus some small delta placing the flood around 2250 BC. Now, how about that? Just going back to the first temple, you're only going back approximately 2,000 years to get the flood. But, now listen to this now. Unfortunately, the Egyptian dynasties, among others, and I've mentioned those in China, the China dynasty, and then the Eastern Africa, the anthropologists have worked in that continuously for the last 100 years. And they have found that these societies run continuously back, before, and after with no interruption by what we would deem a catastrophic worldwide flood that would have destroyed their culture and civilization. And then the eight would have been responsible. If they were the only ones remain, they would have to spread out to all areas of the earth without any cultural interruption in the histories and the carbon datings, with the written records dating well back before 22 BC. Like I say, the Great Pyramid itself dates back to the 26th century. Who built that thing? It can't even be built today. And there was no interruption in the history. And carbon dating 14 and other dating methods will verify that. So these are just the historical aspects. The enormous consequences of a worldwide, devastating, bone-crushing flood to cover the whole earth. Like I say, if you include the mountain chains, which the Bible would indicate, you see that localized, was it talking about the, you know, it's just like, and it came to pass in the days of Caesar Augustus, the whole world was to be taxed. Well, we know that that's not true. We know that it was just a central located area where that Caesar Augustus ruled over, which was by no means the whole world. So these ambiguous statements taken and spun out of context and held literally by these covering the earth theorists of religious idiots, in a way. I'd say that because I might indict your thinking here. Why do other flood myths vary so greatly from the Genesis account? They're common, they're worldwide, like I say. And if you come from a common source, you should expect the similarities in most to be interlinked and connected to, and should. They show great diversity. For example, people that survive on the highland or trees in the myth about as often as on boats and rafts. Another flood myth includes a covenant not to destroy all life again. And why should we expect Genesis to be accurate when we know that other people's sacred stories change over the time, and the changes of the flood to Genesis story have occurred in later traditions? And that's all documented proof. It's not reasonable to assume that the changes occurred between the story's origin and it being written down in its present form. Question, is it? These are the things that you need to think about. Well, let's look at some more aspects. How about the diversity? How did animals get to their present ranges? I mean, some of them's got to go up to the North Pole. And had any poles at that time. Some's got to get down to the South Pole. Think about the enormity. I mean, all the polar bears died, didn't they? I mean, Noah had to go up there and get the polar bears and gather them in for survival. You ever thought about that? You ever thought about the enormous stretch and range that Noah would have had to go out into all the earth and gathered up every living species that breathed to keep from the extinction? You say, well, Pastor, well, I never thought about that. Well, let's just forego the polls and say they weren't even there. Well, it didn't take away the enormity of the distance between where Noah was building the boat and having to go out there and fetch them and bring them back. You see what I'm talking about? He'd had to cross oceans, continents, to round up all of the species which are not indigenous to areas where they can't live and survive. And it looks like to me, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a major problem with trying to connect and gather up all the species worldwide. Now, this is a pretty good-sized Earth for a man and his three sons. We know by the Bible that nobody else helped him. I don't even know if the three sons helped him. It says Noah built the boat. And I know that this was a pretty large vessel, but it couldn't have been any larger than a seagoing tourist boat that could hold maybe, well, what did Titanic have on it? I mean, you know, that was one of the modern flotillas. It was as large or larger than the dimensions of the cubics of Noah's boat, and yet it only had less than 3,000 people on it. Now, let's say 8 people ran the boat, which itself is a major monumental task for 8 people. If you take the U.S. Navy and it's one of its large battleships, which would be comparable to the boat in Noah had. And you take 8 people manning it, some of that would make your job underneath. All these animals found in limited ranges where that they only range in a limited area due to their nature and what they were created for and placed there for particular reasons and seasons. Even if there was a constant 72-degree warm and no need for a polar bear to, you know, to have the type fur he's got. You say, well, you know, he only had one black bear, one grizzly, and now the evolvement. Now, see, they won't even go into the evolutionary theory of Darwin. They ain't going to go there, these evangelicals and these conservative diehards that take literally everything in the Bible. You ain't going to get that argument out of them. They ain't going to go there. They know what you're trying to do, play chess with them, trap them into that theory, so they ain't going to go there. They just take for granted, literally, that somehow God caused an east wind like he did the quail up on the sea to have it to blow in, blow all the animals down to Noah in the barnyard there, and he gathered them up and throwed them in there. 7, it says, and 2, it says, this and that, and then he got them in a boat. And then, miraculously, when it landed on the mountain of Ararat, then God, I mean, Noah didn't have time to run animals back where they originally came from. And so God picked them up, somehow miraculously, and blowed them back over there. Or do we just explain away, or just deny it, or don't even look at the problem? Because, you know, if you get to thinking about which comes first, the chicken or the egg, you could go crazy thinking about it. Because it always reverts itself back to some divine creator who was able, without an egg, to create a chicken. Or without a chicken, to create an egg. That's where you got to look at it. It's not which came first, the chicken or the egg. It's who came before the chicken and the egg. That's your major question. And there is evidence that they were, as it was in Genesis 6, for the whole reason of the flood, that these who were greater than the lessers that were here populating the planet had the ability to come down in some type of transportational vehicles, park them, and for literally thousands of years prior to the flood, prior to Adam, post-Adam, pre-Adam. The difference is those that's in between the two and the effects of what they did, and it's all described in Genesis 6, that these sons of God, these mighty ones, if you read the correct rendering, that these extraterrestrial beings came down and mated with the daughters of men. Didn't say the daughters of Adam. But they begin to have relationship. I don't believe that the problem lays in the understanding. It lays in the tradition of those who have just taken for granted the official, political, religious, philosophical, literal line and swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. That's the problem. Now we've got to re-educate or at least pose the problems. And in the last days, much knowledge shall be increased. We're coming back. We're going to have to answer these questions. And these questions are relative to the issues of the day. And no, my answer to the question, was there a literal flood that covered the whole planet? And my understanding provides me with a resounding no, that the Almighty Father took a certain DNA genetic offspring that he had brought down here at a later date, long after the black man, long after the yellow man, long after the animals were here. He placed Adam in here as a higher-thinking man above all those that were already here, including the black man and the yellow man. He placed him here to raise the level of consciousness in a righteous state because he was the first blushing man, a man that was responsible for his actions. You see, a beast that is territorial, if you get in a barnyard with a giant bull in breeding season, and you particularly agitate the bull, he'll gore you to death because he has a right, he feels like, to protect his territory and his herd. And likewise, if you go into where lions are, or tigers, or any other predatory species that has aggressive nature, they will defend their territory and they'll kill you. They don't have a sense of doing wrong. They don't go on trial for murder because they don't have a conscience. And the Bible said, how do you know where the spirit of a beast goeth upward or downward? Now that's the spirit that makes it alive, not the spirit of intelligence. It don't have the spirit. It's a brute beast. Brute. Without the ability to think or have a consciousness for its actions. There's only one species, ladies and gentlemen. I hate to get into this because, man, I'm coming across as racial and anti-social as I can be when I make this statement, but there's only one race of people upon the earth that has the ability to blush and have a conscience for its actions, and that is the Aryan race. And these are the ones that were punished, only them. They lived in a central plains surrounded by a mountain chain that made a cup or a bowl in the earth. And they were. It was a fertile, rich valley, a garden, a paradise, lush, and it supported their population, which weren't many. But as they began to go out into the earth, they began to intermix, interbreed, intermarry. And then it came down to where that fertile region, that fertile valley, where all these lived, there was only one, as Yahweh searched the residence of where these beings lived, and he only found eight souls, Noah and his children, his family, worthy of being saved for seed's sake. This is what it's all about. You listen to Pastor Buddy, and I'll continue this tomorrow night, and we're live here tonight. Praise y'all. If you'd like to call me, I'm live. Give me a call here at the studio. We'll talk about this issue. Pastor Buddy, area code 423-626-2172. That's area code 423-626-2172. If you'd like to write me, it's Pastor Buddy. Post Office Box 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee, the zip 37824. Why don't you give me a call? We'll talk about these things, and you can write me if you'd like to tuck in a little love offering for the show. Earmark it and say this is for the support of the Shepherd's Call. We love to hear you, although we don't agree with you in all things. Just like Brother Willie, I was delighted when he called in the other night. I don't even know the man. But he says we don't agree on all things, and probably he listens to me a little bit. I've never listened to him. But he called and said, I don't agree with everything Pastor Buddy believes, but I do believe one thing, that Jews are not God's chosen people. That's what he said on the Clay Douglas Show. And I tend to agree with him. They're not. But then I tend to disagree with him because there's some there is. But within that faction, the Cainites, who were mixed, bloodline mixed with the seed of Abraham, there's your problem. Now, these Khazars and Khoses, Jews and are not, these are just liars. And so Willie was correct in his posing his statement. Praise Yahweh. So we appreciate all of your input to the Shepherd's Call. If you'd like to give us a call, you can. Area code 423-626-2172. Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee. That's up 37824. Give me a call in here tonight. Praise Yahweh. Write me a letter here every night, 5 days a week. And you can hear me tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Eastern Standard Time on Truth Radio. Yahweh bless ya. We'll see ya. Come on out and keep yourself dry.
Thank you for listening to the Shepherd's Call, live on Truth Radio. We hope you'll join us each evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on this same station. Praise Yahweh.